Hello and welcome to episode 60 of Woman, Conversations for the Curious. I'm Amy Crawford, founder of the holistic ingredient brand and lifestyle store, curated exclusively for women. This podcast series is dedicated to women seeking to enrich their lives with every drop of zest. I'm deeply passionate about fostering comfort and confidence as we explore the multifaceted world of womanhood together. In this episode, I have a fantastic conversation with Kerry Sackville about the trials and tribulations of dating in midlife. Kerry is an Australian author, columnist, and social commentator. Her work has appeared in numerous publications, including the Sunday Times UK, SBS Life, news.com.au, mamamia.com, the Australian Women's Weekly, and Prevention magazine. A long-time contributor to the Sydney Morning Herald, Melbourne Age and Sunday Life magazine, Kerry's columns are regularly amongst the most widely read across the sites. Kerry has written 5 works of non-fiction and contributed to 3 anthologies. She's a regular guest on ABC Radio, commercial radio and podcasts around the country. This episode is a must listen for any women considering dipping their toe into the world of online dating, and for those in need of a bit of encouragement to persevere. It's juicy and I think you're going to love it. Today's episode is brought to you by Kerry's very own book, Out There, A Survival Guide for Dating in Midlife. This is an essential book for women jumping onto the roller coaster of midlife dating, and quite frankly, I wish it had been available when I started online dating myself many moons ago now. You can find your very own copy in the Holistic Ingredients store right now. So this conversation today is a really good example of if you don't ask, you don't get. Some of my listeners will know that on Instagram a few weeks earlier, prior to this conversation, I asked if anyone would be happy to pop their hand up and chat to me on my podcast about what it's like to date post-long relationship or marriage in your midlife and beyond. And not only did I manage to locate someone with this very experience, but she's even written a book on the topic. So I'm feeling very fortunate today. So without further ado, welcome to Kerry Sackville. Thank you so much for being on my show.
I'm very happy to talk to you.
I think, Kerry, you are going to bring quite some comfort to a lot of women in my community who would be eager to hear this conversation. So I'm really glad to have you here. Now, your book, Out There, The Ultimate Survival Guide for Dating in Midlife. I wondered if we could start there. Can you share a bit about your personal journey and what, we're obviously going to talk a lot about your dating experience, I hope you don't mind, but what led you to write the book?
So I was married for a long time. My ex and I were married for about 17 years. We'd been together for many years before that. And I've really been in back-to-back relationships since I was 17 years old. I honestly had never been single until I was divorced at the age of 44. So I had 3 long-term relationships and met all my partners organically, as we did back then, because we didn't have the online world. And so when I found myself single at 44 with 3 children, I really had no idea how to navigate the online dating world. And I'm a writer. I work from home. So I wasn't meeting people organically at all. Most of my friends were still married or in long-term relationships. I was almost never introduced to anyone. And if I hadn't tried online dating, I wouldn't have met people. And I was, I think, a very common experience as well of people who divorce in midlife is that your social life just tanks because married people are really poor at looking after their newly single friends. So if you are listening and you are married and you have single friends, please check on them on the weekends or invite them over or to join you and your partner, because it's really lonely. And so I tried online dating. It was utterly bewildering. I think I wrote on the back of the book that I made every mistake there was possible to make. And I meant that. I really had no idea what I was doing. And so I wrote the book that I wish I had at the time. I wrote a guide to dating in midlife. I called it a survival guide because the book won't guarantee you a partner at the end of it. Nobody can guarantee you a partner. Nobody can find a mate for you. But what I hope my book will do is to help people to stay sane during the very turbulent time that you can have online, to give people skills and tips and tactics to get through the process and even maybe enjoy it with as little emotional toll as possible.
And that's an interesting one, actually, in itself, enjoying it. I personally, having had many years' experience online dating, I've got, like you, I imagine, some torturous stories, some very challenging stories, and some not so great experiences. But as well, there's been some really wonderful experiences that have come from it. And I think
Definitely,
I feel like more often when we have these sorts of conversations, they often pertain to the negative aspect of online dating. And so it'd be good to share some positive experiences that you've had as well along the way. But can I ask what inspired you to start dating after your marriage? Was there sort of, can I ask roughly how long it was until you sort of felt ready? And what was it?
I didn't wait till I was ready, and that was a huge mistake.
Right.
So I that's something that was one of the one of the errors that I made, and I really now encourage everybody just to take some time out to just settle yourself, settle your kids, learn to be okay on your own first. And in fact, the book I wrote, my most recent book, is called The Secret Life of You, How a Bit of Alone Time Can Change Your Life, Relationships, and Even the World. And this isn't a plug. I'm just saying this was the whole process and the journey that I went through. So I really wish that I had learned that beforehand. So I found myself alone at home. I think it was a Saturday night. It was one of the very few nights that my kids, one of the first nights my kids had gone off to their dad's. And I was alone in my house, in my apartment, my new apartment. And I just felt this crushing loneliness. And I had read about these dating sites, and it was really a spur of the moment decision. It was very soon after my separation. I'd also kind of fallen into a very ill-advised fling with an old friend very quickly afterwards, and that had kind of blown up. And the first thing I did, it was a matter of probably 2 or 3 months, I think. And the first thing I did was try, I think it was eHarmony. And I started to fill out the online questions to form a profile. And it was so time consuming
I
and
was going
so
to say
liberating.
eHarmony. Sorry to
Oh,
interrupt, but eHarmony is just pages of questions.
pages. And it was overwhelming. Then I was like, yeah, no, not doing this. And I shut that down and I loaded Tinder onto my phone.
Right.
It was, as I said, it was very spur of the moment, and it was honestly like a wonderland. It was just swiping and swiping pages and pages and pages of photos, and on first glance, it looks incredible. You think, wow, there's a whole smorgasbord of men. And in fact, the first person I connected with was an incredibly good-looking guy. We went out, we had a fabulous time. He wasn't ready for a commitment. I wasn't ready. Well, he just wasn't someone I could see myself with anyway. But we had a really great time. We stayed in touch, and that was a very early, really good experience. But then after that, things kind of, tanked a little bit when I had no idea how to negotiate what I was doing, and got into some pretty sticky and unpleasant situations.
Do you think that your decision then to start online dating was just a little bit reactive in terms of how you were feeling about your solo, about your aloneness? I think it's easy, isn't it, to go to, and I can say this as somebody who's had experience in doing this, but it's easy to go to online dating sites to look for a bit of validation and an approval and to feel seen, and isn't it?
Oh, completely. And I think what I was doing was trying to escape from a really unpleasant feeling, which was feeling lost with my kids out of the house, feeling lonely, feeling scared, really having no idea how to navigate life as a single person because I hadn't been single. And something that I learned, I think something that is so important, is if you approach dating from the point of view of fear and desperation, you're desperate to escape from a feeling, you are in a really disempowered position, and you are going to end up making poor choices. And you are also going to end up in a position where the other person has all the power, because if you are too scared to be by yourself, then you're going to do anything to remain in a situation with somebody else, even if it's not good for you. So what I learned many, many, many years later is that you have to learn to be comfortable on your own. And then you can approach dating from a position of, well, I'm okay. So now I'm looking for someone who can enhance my life or whose company is actually better than being alone,
Great
which is very,
advice.
very different. And then if it's not serving me, I can walk away. So, but at the time, I was really looking to escape from discomfort, which is the worst reason, really, to start dating.
Okay, really good advice. Can I ask, when you set up your profile, did you have someone helping you? Did you
No,
have did you have a, did you have
I
didn't
had
have a
no one
single
helping me.
friend? Really?
Definitely not. No, I had no one. At the time, I had a friend who'd been divorced for a couple of years and she was in a relationship. And I was genuinely one of the only single people I knew. And what I also discovered on the dating scene is that it's real, or being single anyways, it's really important to have a group of single people around you. And I made single friends, people who, I could spend time with and go out with on a Saturday night. And as I said, because married people aren't really great at recognizing how to look after their single friends. So no, I had absolutely no one. And I really just put a photo up. And I think my first profile said something like, likes chocolate or something like that. And eventually I kind of culled it and had a bit of a better profile. But yeah, I didn't, I remember at the time just swiping on anyone who looked reasonably okay. And yeah, my first experience was just flukishly great. We had a terrific time and he
What a
was
great
a
way to start, though. What a great
was
first experience.
fabulous. It was really positive. And obviously over the years I had many other really great dates, but I also had really great dates that surprisingly didn't lead anywhere, or I had really poor dates. I had relationships with people that ended up really hurting me. So I learned over the course of the years how to make better decisions, but at the time I was flying completely blind.
I have to, my husband Andrew, who won't mind me talking about this, I've spoken about it before on another episode, I'm sure, but when I met him on Hinge. He lost his wife several years prior, and this was his first experience online dating.
Oh, wow.
And it was so obvious. It was, I originally said to him during our conversations, I actually don't think we're going to be a good match. And he said, look, can I just pop my hand up to be your adventure buddy? And I said, yeah, sure. I'd love to have a male single friend to hang out and do fun things with. But the reason I'd said I didn't think we were going to be so suitable is because he was so new to online dating that he was really vulnerable and really oversharing. And what you do learn when you've been in online dating for a little while is it's sometimes good to keep your cards a little bit close to your chest and
Definitely.
not give too much away.
Definitely. Because I think it's very easy to meet someone, particularly when you have a really good rapport in texting, because online dating always starts with texting. And you can have a really great rapport and you think, wow, this is someone I'm really going to connect with. And you start sharing and you start planning and imagining kind of how this is going to pan out. And then you meet them and it's like, oh, wow, we don't actually gel in person. Or you can meet someone and have this great first date, second date, and you start again oversharing, and then you realize actually this isn't going to work out, and then you've shared all this with someone you're never going to see again, and it's very it, one of the things I think that's really important is to just keep your expectations low or at least manageable. And what I started to do eventually was just focus on trying to have a good time on a date instead of find the person I was going to be with.
Absolutely.
And
That
when you
was
do that, it kind of takes the pressure off and also reminds you just to keep things in check and to not get too invested and to not share too much with somebody who you really don't know. It takes a long time to get to know someone. We have this kind of weird sense of false intimacy that I think that is in a large part created by the text communication. Because, in text communication, you're actually curating yourself and you're editing yourself and you're thinking about your responses. And it's very different to sharing in person where you're having like this, like an organic conversation. And so you come to meet someone with this almost false sense of intimacy. And instead of how if you met somebody organically at a at a coffee shop and you sort of have a gradual conversation and the intimacy builds up. So it's a really artificial situation. You just have to, it's perfectly possible to form deep connections with people you meet online if, as you've proven. And I've got female friends who I've met online. Not on dating sites, obviously, but in the online world. But you have to go slow and not try to rush things and let things unfold.
But to your point about texting, it is so easy to romanticize conversations, as you've said, when you're texting. You can get this sort of sense of this beautiful person at the other end of the phone that you're messaging, and you can spend sometimes days, weeks, even more texting because it can feel a bit too scary to actually just go out and finally meet them. But in my experience, the longer you leave it, the more sort of the more, not fearful, what's the right word? What sort of, you can build them up so much in your mind that actually meeting them can just make you so incredibly nervous and anxious. And
Yeah,
you're
but
better off
also,
just to.
it's not real. And it is perfectly possible to have great text chemistry with someone that doesn't translate to real life. And on the flip side, like my partner now, I've been with someone for a bit over 2 years. We actually, believe it or not, met organically. And I hadn't, met anyone organically for years and years. But he's not a great texter. He doesn't enjoy texting. And if I'd met him online, I don't know what would have happened because we wouldn't have had that text banter that I experienced with other people that again didn't translate to real life. And one of the things I write in the book that is so important is if you meet someone, if sorry, if you connect with someone online, meet them as soon as possible. Do not let it stretch out into weeks because exactly as you say, first of all, it builds up the expectations, it builds up the tension. You do get very nervous. And then a lot of the time, the chemistry that you find online doesn't translate to real life, and you have wasted weeks of your life. And also, I think there's a lot of scammers out there, unfortunately. And when I say scammers, I don't even mean people who are trying to get money from you. There are plenty of people who are actually in relationships, who are married, who have no intention of meeting you in real life, or people who just are there to connect with people, to get an ego boost, to feel a bit of, that kind of false intimacy that you get online, who never intend to meet up with anybody for whatever their reasons are. And you find that you can, I made that mistake early on. I mean, I had a whole conversation with someone that I write about in the book who turned out to be a Getty image. Like it was someone who'd lifted images from Getty images and wasn't himself. And that happens, very often. Somebody is buzzing me in the background. This is real life podcasting. And so if somebody is hesitant to meet you, that is a huge red flag. And what I would say to that is if someone can't meet you within, say, a week of connecting, then what you do is say, thank you, let's just put this on hold. And when you're able to meet, we can meet. But don't waste time in long conversations.
And Kerry, you've mentioned that you mentioned that you make every mistake known to woman, known to womankind in dating. Can you can would you be comfortable to share one of the biggest lessons you've learned from those mistakes?
Oh yeah, so that was one of them, to always meet quickly. The other one is to always do a reverse image search on the photos of the people you're considering meeting, because do you know how to do a reverse
Yeah, no,
image?
so I was going to say, I think for the listeners, how do we do that?
Okay, so you literally take the photo, you do a screenshot of the photo, and you feed it into Google image search. You press a little photo icon in Google and you upload that photo, and it will tell you if that photo is anywhere on the internet, because there are plenty of people there, unfortunately, who will take images that don't belong to them and use them to create a fake profile. So it's just a very easy way. If you can't find the images online, or if the image leads you to that person's Facebook page, then you know that it's legit. You're pretty sure it's legit. So that's one of them. Another one is to never ever commit to a three-course dinner on the first date. Keep a first date really short and sharp. So meet them for a coffee, meet them for a quick drink, have an hour limit, have a hard exit, meaning say when you get there, if you're meeting at 6, I have to be out of here by 7. And that means that if it goes really well, great, you can extend it. You can say, oh, look, I'm going to change my appointment. Or even better, you just make a date for another time. I always gave the name and number of the person I was meeting to a friend because I think that's really important for women, just to be safe, always meet in a public place. And I think the other really important one is just to, as I said earlier, keep your expectations low and manageable. And if you try to look at each date as the opportunity to have a chat, get to know somebody, and maybe come to the end of the night having had, a decent hour, maybe learn something about somebody else or a different job or a conversation that interests you, then it's a win. If you're looking to every date as a failure, if you don't meet your next life partner, then it's going to be a series of disappointments.
But then, you also then, if you are looking for the life partner, you miss out on opportunities to meet really great people that on paper may not be the ideal romantic fit for you. One of my dearest friends, who's about 15 years younger than me, wasn't going to be a lifelong partner, but I met him on, can't remember which app it was, but he is now one of my best mates. And it's just been one of the best upsides of dating,
100%.
a guy with that attitude.
I made a few friends through online dating, definitely. And to that point as well, I think the other thing, the biggest lesson, I mean, there's a lot of lessons, there's a lot of kind of guidelines that I have in the book, but probably the biggest lesson, if you are looking for a long-term relationship, and plenty of people aren't, so it's perfectly fine if you're interested in just meeting people or casual hookups or whatever, that's all fine as long as both people are on the same page. But if you are looking for a long-term relationship, I think the biggest mistake that women make is to not ask the hard questions because we're frightened of the answer. We don't want to hear the answer. So you get into a situation where you're dating someone, maybe sleep with them, maybe you don't, but you are making assumptions about what the future is. You're hoping that this is going to lead somewhere, but you're scared to actually ask. And it's really important to be able to sit down with someone and say, what do you want? Like, are you looking for what I'm looking for? Are you seeing other people? If that's something, if monogamy or not sleeping with someone who's sleeping with other people isn't to you, you have to actually ask and not make assumptions.
Yeah, great advice. And also, I think in that, on to that point, something I've often spoken about before is not yucking other people's yums. I think being respectful of other people's choices to have the sorts of relationships that they seek, and if they have the honesty to be open that they're polyamorous or non-monogamous or in an open relationship or married but open, that's okay. That's their choice. And there are lots of people out there that are looking for similar. But to just let people be who they want to be, and as you say, ask the question. If you don't like it, just there's no need to judge someone for it, for their choice.
Absolutely. Absolutely. I connected with people online who were in open relationships. I remember meeting someone who had a partner who lived overseas and was looking for something casual, in Australia. I met people who really were just looking for hookups. They just weren't ready to commit. And that's all fine. It just didn't suit what I was looking for. You wish them well, or you decide to meet as friends, or nothing at all. But really, it's important to find people with whom you're on the same page, whatever that page is.
Actually, a question's come to mind for you. So when you're, let's say you've gone to a coffee shop or a bar, and you're having a chat to someone, and and let's be honest, sometimes within 60 seconds that this is not going anywhere. Did you, when you were dating, have find the courage to admit it there and then and say, look, I don't think this is going to work, and leave? Or typically, as a rule, would you just suffer through it, for the want of a better word, and leave and then tell them later? I'm often inquisitive as to what people do here.
That was a really hard thing to do. I found right up until the end of my dating days, I found it really, really hard to reject people. I think it's especially as women, we're programmed to be people pleasers, and it's a really, really hard thing to say. And there were only two dates that I can recall where it was so bad, and the person was actually offensive, that I said, this isn't going to work, and walked out early. Generally, what I believed is that I can sit through 45 minutes with someone. I can sit through how long it takes to have a cup of coffee or to have a drink. I can commit to that unless something really offensive went down. And then what would generally happen is he would either say, "Great, nice to meet you." I'd say, "Nice to meet you." And it was clear, we weren't going to see each other again. It was a mutual kind of swipe no. Or he'd say, "I'd love to see you again." And I said, "Oh," I'd say something like, "Oh, you can, like, I'll text you later." I would generally put it off till later. It was very hard. It was very hard to do it in person. I'm a pretty assertive person, but it's a really hard conversation to have. And I think it's probably unrealistic for a lot of us to be able to say in that moment, "I'm sorry, I don't think this is going to work." But then what would happen is I would get home and then send a text saying, "Lovely to meet you. I am not feeling a connection." And the reason I said that, it took me quite a while to come up with that line. In the very early days, I made what I now realize was quite a serious mistake of giving men reasons why I didn't want to see them again. And when you give a man a reason, often he will then push back and argue. So I remember once saying to a man, "Look, you're not close to your kids. Family is really important to me, and this is not going to work." And that was really, in hindsight, a really shitty thing to do. Because then he wrote back, "Well, it's not my fault. I'm not close with my kids and you're punishing me." And it was awful. Sometimes I would say, "Look, I think we've got different values." And he would say, "Well, you don't know what my values are. How can you decide?" So when you say something like, "I'm just not feeling a connection," there's no comeback. And that's all you need. You don't actually need a reason. You just need to not feel a connection. You don't have to justify it. So that's generally what I would do.
And that's I in the main did it in a very similar way and said a very similar thing to you. Learned very quickly that it's better to say I don't feel that we have the connection or whatever it was. Because as you say, they can't argue with that. However, once I did go on a date that was just so uncomfortable. I was so uncomfortable. I had to get out of there. I think I lasted about 20 minutes. And I actually was so uncomfortable, it would have been all over my face. And I decided to name it there. And I can't remember specifically what I said, but I said, he asked if I wanted a second drink. And I was amazed at that because the conversation was so dreadfully awkward. He was a very socially anxious guy, which was making me really anxious. And I said, look, I won't. Thank you, but I don't. It would have been something like, I don't really feel that we have the connection that I'm seeking here. Thanks so much. I'm going to go. And I was so proud of myself. But let me tell you, I think one of the reasons why I often wasn't honest in those situations was fear of retribution, was fear of being attacked, a fear of coming back at someone coming back at me and or fighting me or getting angry with me, which was a little bit of a trigger. And what happened actually after that is I came home and then got a flurry of messages from this guy abusing me for not having the decency to go away and put him down gently and said and abused me for being so direct and so honest. I was kindly honest, but that was really bad. I obviously triggered him in some way and he attacked me. And it can be a bit scary, I think.
It's incredibly scary. And I just want to, as I said, I did walk out of two dates early. I'm not recommending that people stay in any situation where they don't feel safe or comfortable. And that's why I also told somebody where I was going and gave them the number of the person I was with. And then for some dates where I wasn't sure, I would have a friend contact me after that hour and say, "Are you okay?" Because that was also a way to get out if I wasn't feeling comfortable. But yeah, we women we do feel vulnerable, and there were a couple of situations where I felt not safe. And one of those was actually someone I didn't meet online. He was somebody that I knew organically, and I made the mistake of agreeing to go to his house. I remember we'd arranged to go for a drink, and this was somebody that I actually wasn't interested in as a I you know it was a single another single father, somebody that I knew through my kids, and I had agreed to kind of go have a drink with him, really as a friend thing, like two single people just sharing experiences. And he kind of gently manipulated me into coming to his place. And that was a really bad situation. And I kind of fled that situation. So never go to someone's house and like always meet out in the open unless you really know them is something else I would recommend. But it's very difficult. And we women are threatened and men can turn. And I had a couple of men get really, really angry at me for not wanting to pursue.
Which Which I think is it's so testament to the fact it was never going to work. Like I had a lovely, what I would call walking relationship, because I was going to say that what I really enjoyed towards the end is walking dates. I think especially around COVID when we were allowed to leave our 5K radius in Melbourne, I used to just enjoy walking with my dog. If they had a dog, it sort of took the pressure off because you're not looking straight at each other, and walks in a busy park or somewhere where there was a few people around, something that I enjoyed. But there was one particular guy that I had a few walks with, and I just couldn't feel, I just, after probably three dates, it really wasn't there. I really wanted it to be, which I think can be really confusing. He just was on paper so right. And
Yes, the
so,
old paper.
on pay, everything about him, there was so much of his values and there was so much alignment, but it was just a chemistry thing. I just couldn't imagine kissing him. And that's problematic for the sort of
Definitely.
relationship that I wanted. And so, I really kindly wrote him a message. I don't know why I didn't just pick up the phone. I think it had just been three, and I wrote him a note, and it was really kind. And he was so disappointing in his response that that spoke volumes. It was just such an immature response from someone I felt was far more self-aware, but he sort of was, yeah, whatever. Good luck on your search. As if you're going to find this perfection that you're looking for or something like that. It was just, you know what, mate? You've just, yeah, that's all I needed. You're never going to be right. It's going to be so disappointing.
Absolutely. And a lot of people get very angry when they're rejected. And it's you don't need to actually listen to any messages. There were a couple of times when a man was rude to me and I blocked him straight away and didn't give him a chance to even respond to my last message. You don't have to accept messages from someone. And I've often heard women say, "Oh, he sent me this stream of abusive messages." And like one abusive message and you're gone, like
Yeah,
blocked.
oh yeah, absolutely. One strike and you're out, no question. But the other thing I was about to, which made me think about giving out your phone number, I think it's so much better communicating via the app
Definitely.
for as long as is possible, and so that you're not then in the situation where you're trying to block, WhatsApp or mobile phone or something.
Oh, absolutely. And there's so many ways to communicate. If you don't want to communicate through the app, you can communicate through Facebook Messenger or Instagram direct messages, whatever, any platform you're on. There is really now very little reason to give somebody your phone number until you know them.
But and you will, there are the odd person will pop up very early and say, "Can you just give me your phone number? Let's just chat there." I find it really difficult to chat via this app, or it's glitchy or something, and
No,
generally I
correct.
wouldn't
They
trust it.
will. No, you just say, or what you can do if you want to is call them, is just block your number. And if they want a phone call, you can just call them. You block your number, but you do not have to give out your number to anyone. And in fact, you shouldn't until you know them and trust.
And something else, actually, speaking of, learning from experience, that I recall in my younger years of early years of online dating was, rather than just accepting within myself that the connection wasn't there and they weren't right, trying to make them right for me and giving them feedback and wanting them to change for me. Can you ever recall doing that? Sort of saying to someone, "Well, this could probably work out if you just responded to my texts a little bit more promptly. And it takes you 2 days to reply to a text, and that leaves me feeling really uncomfortable." When you sort of try to change the person so they fit your expectations, it's never going to work.
Oh God. Look, I can relate to that in a couple of ways. So on the one hand, there were men who, exactly as you described, were really good on paper, and I just didn't feel a connection. And you're almost self-flagellating, like, why can't I drum up a feeling for this person? He's so right. He's got the right look or the right job or the right friends or the right attitudes or the right values, whatever. If you don't feel the connection, it's just not going to work. And it doesn't matter. You can go out with him five, six times, and you can't drum up that feeling out of nowhere. And I actually believe that feeling is our kind of gut instinct telling us that this person is actually not right for us. But then the other way I would do it is, again, exactly as you described it. I would meet somebody and he clearly wasn't invested in me. He clearly wasn't ready for a relationship. I'm using the singular, but this happened a few times where I'd meet someone and I would think, I like him. I want to make this work. He's someone I'm really interested in. And I would be trying to force a relationship that just was never going to happen. He wasn't interested. And I'd be hanging in there, getting these like scraps of attention, seeing him once every couple of weeks, sending a message. And it's like, or he would send me a message and then I'd respond. It was like he'd thrown his phone into the sea. You know, you just wouldn't hear back for days. And it's so frustrating. And so, and you're again, kind of trying to make it happen and saying, yes, this makes me feel bad, or, you know, trying to make plans and they're pushing back, when what you really should be saying is, this person is not matching my investment, so I'm tapping out.
What you've just mentioned then, one of my girlfriends described that feeling you had. I imagine you had a feeling as feeling starved. And if
Yes.
ever in a in this kind of early stage relationship, you are feeling starved of attention, connection, their engagement with you, then it just isn't right. You shouldn't have that feeling of being starved. Two people should be leaning in for it to work, leaning in at the
Exactly.
same degree.
And they do. Men, you know, men know what they're doing. And in my experience, and I had quite a lot of experience, a man who is interested in you will contact you. He will make time for you. This whole idea of I'm too busy is absolute nonsense, because when a man is interested, he will find the time. And it is so common to see a man that you have been chasing, a man who's not interested in commitment or calls himself a commitment phobe or isn't ready for a relationship, and then he meets somebody else and wham, he's married within, you know, 6 months. Like, they will commit to the person they're interested in. So it is just really disingenuous. And I know they probably believe what they're saying, but if a man says to you, I am not ready for commitment, I'm not interested in a relationship, I can only do something casual, that's all valid, but he's talking about you. He's not ready to do it with you. And there is every chance that he will meet somebody else who he's prepared to commit to. It's a hard truth, but it's best just to accept it and not sit around waiting for this man to, you know, be cured and suddenly be open to a commitment with you.
And analyzing it to the nth degree, as we have all done.
Yeah. And it's not that there is anything lacking in you. You're not doing anything wrong. Just like the men that you're, you know, not interested in aren't doing anything wrong. It's just, this is not the right person for you. That's
Who wrote the book? He's just not that into you. I honestly,
how are you?
I found great comfort in that, and I became very pragmatic when I was online dating, because if he's not leaning in and he's not responsive, and he's if he's cancelling, at the end of the day, that was my answer. He's just not that into me. Like, don't overthink
Exactly.
this, because
Yep.
he will come my direction if he is.
Yes, and they do.
And it can be a hard reality, but it can be the truth, because we can't obviously influence the energy or the connection that we feel for someone.
Yeah. And really, you know, the whole idea that women shouldn't chase men, no one should chase anybody. And same for men. You know, you don't need to chase the right person. It's fine to make the first connection. It's fine to ask somebody out. It's fine to call somebody. But then if they're not matching your level of investment, it's time to back out.
And now, Kerry, there's a couple of terms that you use, I believe, in your book, which, as you know, I'm still waiting on to be delivered from Utopia, frustratingly. Ghosting and negging.
Oh, yeah.
I think these days most people will understand ghosting, but I want to ask you about that. How did you approach ghosting with your online dating experiences?
Okay, so I ghosted someone myself really early on, and I wrote about that in the book, and I felt really ashamed of that, but that was in my very early days where I just didn't know what else to do. I hadn't yet worked out how to reject someone. It felt really, really hard. So I think I went on one date with someone, and it was quite a long date. And by the end, I had a little bit to drink, and I think I kissed him when I shouldn't have kissed him. And he was really excited and you know, said to me at the end, I can't wait to see you again. I was like, yes. And then I got out of there and thought, oh God, what have I done? And I really just didn't respond to his messages, didn't respond to his phone calls. And then eventually he called me from a silent number. And he said, hi, it's me. Oh, so you are there. And I just said, look, I'm so sorry. He said, you could have just told me. And I realized then he was absolutely right. So from then on, I never ghosted anyone again. It was a cowardly thing to do, but I didn't know any better. But yeah, I was ghosted myself, absolutely. Where you go out with someone, you think you have a great time, and you just never hear from them again. They don't respond to your messages. And I know that I understand what that man did in chasing me up and forcing me to give a response, but I think it's unnecessary. I think that ghosting is an answer in itself. If somebody doesn't contact you, short of them being in hospital or dead, which is highly unlikely, and if they are, there's nothing you can do anyway. I think that is an answer. Ghosting is an answer. The lack of contact is an answer.
Yeah.
And we have to find closure ourselves. I think the whole idea of needing closure from someone, whether you've had one date, six dates, or a year-long relationship, there is nothing that somebody can say to you at the end of a relationship that makes it better. Ultimately, it's like you said, they're just either they're not that into you, or they've changed their mind, or something has happened and their feelings have dried up, and that's something that you have to learn to accept yourself.
It is a harsh reality of dating, though, isn't it? You can be having wonderful connect on text, even just a text, a conversation with someone, and you feel the energy and you've turned it into something in your mind, and then they just disappear. Or, as you say, you have a couple of dates and then they just disappear, and it's hard, and it's hurt,
Really
really, really
hard.
hurtful, and it's easy to get very it's difficult not to have that impact your own sense of self-esteem and self-worth in the process.
Look, it happened to
Yeah.
me on definitely more than one occasion, probably several, but two that I can think of. One, a man I went out with, and we were meant to meet for a drink, and we're having such a great time. It turned into dinner, and then he took me back and showed me his office. Nothing physical happened. It wasn't a, come back to my office and sit on the couch. He just was excited to show me around his beautiful office. It had a beautiful view of Sydney. And, I was absolutely sure that I was going to see him again. Why would he take me back just to show off his office to someone he had no intention of seeing again? And I never heard from him, and it was completely bewildering. Another man I had two fabulous dates with, really great, and we arranged to meet for the third date. And when he turned up, it was a movie date. He barely spoke to me. He barely looked at me. It was clear he'd completely
Checked out.
disconnected. And again, really bewildering. I know now that a lot of people are dating more than one person at a time. It's possible that either of these guys had met somebody else that they liked better. It's possible that they just enjoyed my company enough to have, one or two good dates, but then didn't see a relationship with me. It's possible that they were abducted by aliens. I don't know. But ultimately, it's really bewildering and disappointing. And again, it all just comes back to managing your expectations and to try not to invest anything in anybody other than, wow, this has been a good first date, this has been a good second date, until you have that conversation where you're both expressing that you are interested in having something or trying something more committed. Hard to do.
Yeah, absolutely. Can I ask, Kerry, negging? What is
Ah,
negging? Because I don't think negging was a thing a few years ago.
no, negging's quite a recent thing, and it's
Yeah.
actually something that is taught by the so-called kind of dating coaches, mainly in the United States. And it's a technique that is meant to disarm women and disempower women to make them easy to pick up. So negging is kind of backhanded compliments. So it would be me saying something like, oh, wow, Amy, nice dress. Very brave of you to wear something like that. Wow, a lot of women your age wouldn't be prepared to show their arms, but wow, you're really brave to do that. Or yeah, great hair color. Like, where do you get it dyed? It's just a way to show you that they actually aren't impressed by you at all. And the aim is to kind of then make you more needy for their approval. And that happened to me not very often, but it happened to me a couple of times, enough for me to recognize what it was. And it can be really, again, it can be really confusing and bewildering for people who are decent human beings who don't try to hurt other people and who don't expect that kind of behavior. When you're expecting the best from people and they deliver the worst, it can take a while to realize what's going on, and you sort of get a bit taken aback, like, oh wow. And it's very easy to kind of make excuses for men in the moment. Like, oh, I'm sure he didn't mean that. I'm sure he didn't mean to insult me. But again, I think it comes down to listening to your gut. And if something feels wrong and makes you uncomfortable, then you listen to that feeling. Don't second guess yourself. And negging, once you know what it is, it's pretty easy to spot, and it's a huge red flag. You know, a guy that needs to do that to kind of get the upper hand is not someone you want to have a relationship with or even want to have a date with.
And Kerry, what would you say to a woman who's had similar experiences and let's say has been ghosted a couple of times, which is not unusual, maybe had a date that was a failure, maybe was rejected, has had a spate of not so positive experiences. You probably would have felt that feeling of just feeling, oh, really deflated about it all, a bit negative, almost a bit of bitterness kind of creeping in, like you're just over it. What, in your experience, what did you do when you felt like that, assuming you did?
Oh God, I definitely did. And I would have periods where I just opted out. And I think that's really important. I think when you're feeling negative, you're not going to recognize good people anyway. And when you're approaching dating, as I said, from a place of either desperation or just negativity, it's not a good place to approach dating. And I actually got to quite a dark place a couple of times, not just because of dating, because of other things that were going on in my life as well. And what I found is that I was becoming quite defensive and I was becoming quite guarded and angry. And so the slightest thing would make me turn on someone. And I don't mean turn as in start to yell and scream, but turn me off them. And I would start to see red flags when perhaps there weren't any. You know, when you get into that headspace where you're just expecting the worst from people, and you're really, really on guard, it's not a good place to approach dating. So the best thing you can do then is to just give it a break. You don't need to be dating all the time. And so I would take some quite long breaks. You know, a few months, few weeks, few months, whatever was needed at the time, to just step back, delete the apps, or just put them on pause, and just get back to my friends and my kids and my work and my interests, and then come back when I felt more robust again. And also, I think one of the chapters in my book is called "It's Not a Numbers Game," and I think there is this myth, perpetrated especially by people who are married, who don't actually understand how dating works, that it's just a numbers game. You just have to date as many people as you can and then you find the one. In fact, there's absolutely no point in going out on dates with people that you aren't interested in just to get your numbers up. I think you should be really selective about the people that you go on dates with. And if you have to kind of psych yourself up to go out with someone, like, oh God, here's another date. I'm not expecting it to be good. I really don't want to go, then it's best not to. You know, it's perfectly fine to be unpartnered. I think at the very least, you should feel a sense of, well, hopefully this person will be interesting, or I'm looking forward to meeting them, or very, very least, like, this person sounds okay. I'm not really excited, but I'm recognizing that this is somebody I may, find a connection with. But if you're thinking, oh God, they don't sound good, I don't like the look of them, I don't like what they've been saying, but I feel I should go, no, it's not worth it.
Be
Best
brave.
not to. Be selective. So take a break, and when you go back on, there was this book I read many years ago about food and eating, and it said that when you're at a buffet, you don't have to try everything. Like, just go for what looks really delicious. And I think it's the same with dating. You know, you go online, and if there's not somebody that sparks your interest, then wait. Wait till there is, and only go out with the people who you are interested in meeting.
So, Kerry, what would you say to someone who, a woman who's perhaps listening, who is out of a long relationship and feeling really tentative? What would you say to them as they're contemplating the idea of getting to the online dating world, but they're really worried about it? What would be the, what would you have them do?
What I'd have them do is ask themselves why they're interested in doing it. And if it's for the right reasons, it's because they are interested in meeting people, then that's a good reason. If it's because they feel social pressure to partner up, not a good reason. If it's because they're desperately lonely, not a good reason. I would suggest that they, look to friends and hobbies and social opportunities to do that. I think the most important thing is, I think it's normal and natural to be nervous, but you have to come from a fairly robust place. You have to feel okay in yourself, because it does take a degree of resilience to be able to navigate dating. If you feel like you're going to be crushed by rejection, Again, not a great idea, but if you feel that you're reasonably robust and yes, be nervous, it's scary. Then what I would suggest is you start with one app, one app. And I wouldn't suggest something like eHarmony, which takes, like 3 hours just to set up a profile. Start with one app, something like Hinge or Bumble, rather than Tinder, I would say, and just swipe through and choose, to swipe on people that you think look really interesting, and then have one conversation with someone. Don't It can be quite overwhelming. You don't have to respond to every message. If you're on Bumble, you're the one who starts the conversation, so you've got more control over it. A man can't contact you unless you contact him first. And just take one conversation, arrange something really easy like a coffee date or a quick drink, a 1 hour, and really just dip your toes into it, and then stand back and think, how did that feel? Am I interested in seeing that person again? Am I interested in trying something with someone else, and then
Good
approaching?
advice. Not too overwhelming. Just manage it really slowly.
And
And
choose
what
with a friend. You'll find that any one of your married friends will be delighted to help you swipe.
That's right. They
Married
will.
people love
But
dating sites.
and for those of you who are yet to set up a profile, what does happen when you first set up a profile on any of these dating apps is you are initially inundated because you are fresh blood. So for want of a better word, but that's what happens, isn't it? And so when you go onto a new dating app, the first thing the dating app does is shows you the most popular profiles, in my experience. And that over time dwindles. But you will be like they will be like bees to honey as soon as you start. So it can be very overwhelming when you first get on an app, but it certainly slows.
Definitely slows.
Yeah.
But again, you set the pace. So I remember
That's
that
right.
first night I went on Tinder, I stayed up till all hours just swiping, 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 swiping. And that wasn't, again, a great idea. Like, just swipe a few till you get, a sense of what you're doing and what the kind of lay of the land is. And then just put it down, like, just a little bit at a time. Don't overwhelm yourself. You don't need to swipe through every candidate on the first night.
No, I remember I used to do that because years ago there weren't so many people on dating apps. It was something like 2000 and oh gosh, five, I reckon that I started, and it was RSVP. And you,
Oh,
yeah, but
yeah, good old
it's like
RSVP.
Instagram. You used to be able to get to the bottom of your news feed. It was great, and I,
Oh,
with
you
my
could,
personality, needed to do
even
that.
on Tinder or Hinge, when you've been on it for long enough and you set your parameters to say within 5K or 10K or whatever it is, where I live, the traffic's so bad that just to get 5K away takes you about, half an hour. I would often just get to the end, like, we have no more matches for you. It's like,
Yeah,
oh,
right. How
is
depressing.
that where we are?
Yeah, and then it can be very easy to go, right, new app.
And you find the same people are on all the apps anyway.
That's right. Yeah. Do you think I'm going to let you finish up so shortly, but can I ask, do you think there's, are we at the point now where really, I mean, you have proven that it's still possible to meet someone organically, but would it be fair to say that most people these days who are certainly single in midlife are meeting people via online dating apps?
It's absolutely, and there's definitely no
Yeah.
shame. And I know many people who found partners through online dating. And I certainly met some really interesting guys and had a couple of short-term relationships with people that I met online that didn't work out for whatever reason. And for a lot of us, it's just not possible to meet somebody unless we go online. I wasn't meeting people organically. I mean, my partner I met because he invited me to speak at a conference that he was running, and so that was through a work opportunity. But it was really a fluke, and if I hadn't met him that way, I don't think our paths would have ever crossed. And the online dating world opens you up to so many people who you wouldn't have met otherwise, and there's a lot of advantages to it because if you are smart about it and if you're prepared to communicate your needs and desires, and I'm not talking sexually, I'm talking about what you're looking for. If you're looking for something casual, if you're looking for a long-term relationship, you can screen out people very early on who aren't interested in the same things you are, and you can also screen for people who are. And a lot of people put on apps, no hookups, just long-term relationship, and it just opens up possibilities that weren't there otherwise. There could be someone living, around the corner who you never ever would have bumped into. Particularly with work from home since the pandemic, a lot of people are just not have the opportunity to make connections any other way. So I think it's very widely used. It can be really effective. You've just got to look after yourself and be smart about it.
Yeah. Kerry, thank you so much. That was such a wonderful conversation and so useful for so many women and men listening. Now, I just wanted to touch quickly on your book. So I will in the show notes link to your book, which I've as you know, I've been waiting to receive a copy of it. I'm looking forward to reading it. I've read that it's got so many wonderful reviews, so congratulations.
Thank
But you
you.
also have written other books. You want to just tell us quickly what they are?
Yeah, well, I'll my last, oh, the two books that I think are most relevant to this conversation are Out There, A Survival Guide for Dating Midlife, and The Secret Life of You, How a Bit of Alone Time Can Change Your Life, Relationships, and Maybe the World. And I feel really, really passionately about the importance of solitude, the importance of spending time alone with our thoughts, whether you are in a relationship, whether you are out of a relationship, whatever your living situation, it is so important to be able to just be with yourself. And my book explores why that's so important, why it's so hard these days, because of everything from the culture that we live in, which just values kind of relationships and connections and extroversion, to our mobile devices, which have changed everything. And then I give very, very practical techniques to help people become more comfortable, because it's important for everything from self-awareness, resilience, creativity, and the development of a moral compass, believe it or not, and also for our relationships. You know,
Oh,
being
this
able to
book's.
be okay by yourself is probably the most important thing you can do for your intimate relationships.
Oh, this really resonates for me. I think this book sounds wonderful. And that sounds like a really great podcast discussion, dare I say. It really does. But just sort of feeling into that, I have, over my adult years spent so many years on my own, so many years living on my own and absolutely loved it. But what I am finding increasingly, even though now I am in a marriage and living with someone, is that with social media and with all the online activity that we now have, I find it a little bit more difficult to sit with myself without, as I'm sure many people do, without actually grabbing the phone and just sitting and being.
It's become it's like solitude has become this problem to be solved by picking up our phones. And you and I growing up had lots of time alone with our thoughts. The people listening to this podcast will have grown up in a situation where if we were in our bedrooms, if we were in the car, if we were in the shower, if we were walking down the street, we'd have no choice but to be alone with our thoughts. We might have put on the radio, but we didn't have phones in our bedrooms or cars or access to content. But now, every single idle moment we can just pick up our phone and have this whole world of information, and it's really having profound effects on everything from our ability to concentrate, to our ability to self-regulate, to our emotional well-being. So it's something that's incredibly important. And I certainly don't suggest that anyone goes off and spends, a week in a silent retreat or anything like that, but just things like going for a walk without your phone, switching off or deleting some of your apps, can make a huge difference.
Amazing. Well, we'll definitely be linking to that book in the show notes. That sounds like a really wonderful read. Kerry, thank you so much for your time today. I'm so looking forward to getting this episode out into the world.
Oh, it's been an absolute pleasure. And happy birthday to Wilson.
Oh, thank you so much. He's 13 today, everybody, listeners. Thanks, Kerry. This was episode 60 of Woman, Conversations for the Curious. Know that I am taking a short break from the podcast whilst I navigate a new chapter for the Holistic Ingredients Store. I'll be back in a few weeks with more juicy conversations. You'll find Kerry and further links to her books and work via her website, kerrysackville.com.au. You'll find today's show notes plus a link to purchase her book Out There over at theholisticingredient.com/60. As always, if you're enjoying the series and you've 2 minutes to leave a review on your favourite podcast app, I'd truly appreciate it. Until next time, stay curious.